How do you think society will change when social media one day doesn't become the powerhouse that it currently is?
I love this. So recently, I actually thought of this as like a Netflix series. And this was my big what if this was like a Netflix series, right? So I believe we will all come crashing down. And I say that from experiencing a few years ago when the Instagram logo changed. So it's such a normal thing to just, you know, open Instagram. You're used to the like the icon, you know, it used to be like that orangey kind of Polaroid camera logo. And I just remember I didn't feel the same opening that app just simply because the picture changed, right? So when we talk about social media completely changing, I believe that what we have as habits, what we have as like the normal every single day, we have to kind of just like rewire our brains. So I don't know even how many months it might even take me to get back to, I guess, like normal. Like, what do you think? How long do you think you could go without social media and just, you know, talking to people face to face, they used to?
This is a good question because I literally this morning, so I do like reels with the podcast, and like pretty much the only reason I actually like use or have Instagram on my phone is just for like musical stuff, you know. And I want to be able to just upload it from my PC so that I have no need to have it on my phone at all. And I've just been, mm-hmm. Having this absolute nightmare trying to upload it. I got this app recently that blocks me out of Instagram like certain times in the day and stuff.
That's clever. But I need that.
Yeah, but I literally just, I deleted it the other day, like just the app. And even then I find myself like, I don't know if you just end up like scrolling and you just tap where things used to be. And you're like,
oh, I know. Yeah. How crazy is that? It's like a bit sad, but at the same time, everyone's got habits, you know?
Yeah. I think there's something to embrace with it. Like, I think it,
yes.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I mean, you've got like a big platform that you've built thanks to social media and that you can get your stuff out there and, you know, and find work as well. Like, there's so much to sort of gain from it, but I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's the way I phrased it someone a while ago was like, if social media is a tool, you know, you don't carry tools around with you all the time and look at them. You know, you don't just, if you're building a house, you don't just take the hammer home with you and stare at it all evening. Like, you know, that's not how you build a house. You don't just hammer things. But you know what I mean? Like, you don't just sort of.
Absolutely.
And I feel like it's become more than like just a tool. What's your kind of experience of like dealing with it? Because obviously you've got quite a large following to be sort of dealing with, I guess. What's the whole, how do you kind of, where do you sit with it at the moment?
What do you mean, like my use of social media in my daily life?
Let's go with either. So, to be fair, either is an interesting question, actually. I meant more actually with like the business side of things and sort of the music.
Oh yeah.
But like, yes. To be fair, it's interesting to hear about like just, you know, like personal.
Just my general use. Yeah. Well, like business wise, it helps me out so much. Personal. Like my personal Facebook, right? I barely ever log in there. I don't even know when I did my last post. Even when my band has, you know, like last week, Earth Caller, my band released a single. We announced our headliner. I don't think I even posted about that just because it's just so not, I don't know, it's just not me anymore. Like I think I have all of this energy already used up as Mystique online, that I want to keep my personal life precious and, you know, like free from random people seeing it and stuff. Like I still, you know, I've still got friends obviously and family on Facebook, but it's just, yeah, I think those who know already know what I'm up to and stuff like that, just because like they, you know, like especially my family, they just hear it from my parents. Like I've got a lot of family in Poland, so I'll just be visiting them. So that's the part of me that wants to engage with people without the internet. I think it's a really nice thing to still have the skills engaging with people without relying on your phone and social media. But Yeah, otherwise I remember during the pandemic, I had this little like vision. I was like, damn, like what if one day the world just like, because you know, we just had all these like random thoughts in our heads during the pandemic, like the world ending and stuff. But I was just like, what if one day the power just cuts out? Like, what do we do, right?
Be
And it doesn't
amazing.
go on for like 1 year. But we never know that, right? We just don't know. Like, how soon are people going to start, building themselves up? Like, if they have an online platform that is their business, how are they going to go about it? So yeah, it's a really interesting thing thinking about, what life would be without social media or even, power or the internet. It's such a powerful thing now.
Yeah, I mean, people. I think people jump to like sort of crazy mode pretty quick. Like when the pandemic started over here, I don't know if you had it where people were like hoarding stuff within like the first week
Yeah,
of like
like
when.
toilet paper and stuff.
Oh, I didn't know if that was like. I assumed that was kind of a fairly global thing, but yeah, the toilet paper was the main thing. Pasta was another one. You couldn't get pasta, and it's like
Oh,
it's a weird
yes.
combination of things. You know, like toilet
Yeah.
paper and pasta. Like, what are you anyway?
Yeah.
You know, like.
I normally opt for like a gluten-free, dairy-free, so all that stuff was still available.
Isn't that normally pretty long life though? So I would have thought that'd be the things that people
Yeah.
would go and
Yeah,
like
exactly.
grab first. But the worst thing is everyone, you know, like everyone goes and hoards toilet paper. So then you just like the moment you see something in the shop, you're like, well, I've got to buy like 12, you know, like 12 boxes of it
Exactly. Like
now.
you see what other people are doing, and then that influences your buying decision.
Like joking aside, it actually is a bit like what happens with social media. You see people doing something and you kind of you can feel that pressure to not like necessarily conform, but sort of, I guess, apply yourself in a similar way. You know, if you see someone doing the craziest thing, you're like, oh, well, I've got to do
Yeah.
the, like, I always think with like,
Next craziest thing.
what's it? Because, obviously, what you're kind of the space that you're kind of the sort of musical space you're working in is slightly different to, like, I play guitar, and you know, if you think of your
I
conventional,
can see
like,
that.
oh, you get. I
Very
forgot how the
cool.
guitar's behind me, so I thought it was just my face. I was like, what? How can you? I had someone the
I
other
see
day,
some.
I was quite proud of myself. I was at a gig the other day, and some guy came up to me and he went, are you in a band? I was like, no. And he's like, oh, you look like you're in a band. I was like, oh, cool. I'll take
Oh,
that.
nice.
It was
Nice.
compliment of the day. But
Love it.
what was I? Oh, yeah. So, because you're obviously the kind of the working with the stuff you do in metal where it's kind of not as conventional as, you know, guitar, drums, bass, that kind of stuff on the instrument side. What's it like kind of putting stuff out there online? Like, do people generally respond well to it, or do you get people going like this, you know, this isn't metal or whatever, any of that kind of stuff? What's the kind of balance of that sort of feedback?
I love the haters because,
Nice.
like, just keeps it interesting. Yeah, like since I didn't grow quickly, like straight away. So I gradually got used to, like shitty comments here and there, really nice comments here and there. And I'm at a point right now where I've just naturally grown to the point where I just like see a nat like a natural oh, sorry a nasty comment, right? And I just naturally just read it, and I don't even go to bed thinking about it. I just see it. I just see it. Sometimes I respond, just to give them a bit of a, hey, I see your comment, and then they get back to me and saying like, oh, no, I was actually just like, I still love what you do, but this is just not quite my taste. You know what I mean? They just backpedal. Like, I love that. It's really funny. But for every bad comment that I get back to, I get back to like five good comments though. I just want people that genuinely appreciate what I do to see that I, yeah, still get back to them, and that I appreciate them, and that I'm happy with the haters. But it doesn't, yeah, the hate comments don't really affect me. I have a clear vision with where I want to head. Sometimes my fans really do influence my direction. Like if they want original music, I do what I can to start chipping away at new music. It's a bit hard now because since I'm with Earthcaller now, we're just planning our headliner new music European tour. So I try and do what I can to chip away at things that my followers request.
Yeah, it must be difficult finding that balance, because
Yeah.
I know that I kind of a lot of people there's been an interesting balance where, like, of the people I've chatted to, where some are so far on the other end of the spectrum where they will just completely disregard anything that followers want, and they just post what they want, which I respect in its own way. And then there's, you know, there's people that kind of find that balance. And yeah, is it ever difficult having, like, you know, finding that balance between, like, what you are really passionate about and what kind of your following, again, having quite a big following, what they're kind of wanting to hear? Or have you kind of just built a following where those two things are kind of the same thing?
I feel that I more or less meet in the middle with what the fans want and what I want to create, right? Not only is there me and the fans in the picture, there's a third thing called the algorithm, right? So if my fans want me to do, for example, a full version of, you're familiar with my pimped up videos, like the ones where I add orchestrals and stuff to existing metal songs, right? So I've got a lot of people requesting for me to do full versions of that. And I keep it short for a reason. One, it doesn't take me as long to do. I can just kind of pump them out when I can. And the second reason that I keep them short is so that there's more of a chance of people watching 100% of the video. So the more the video is watched in terms of, like, percentage, the more the video is going to be shared on the news feeds and stuff of more people, right? So the video just keeps going viral and more viral. Now, what I've done is last month I actually launched a Patreon. So that's where I've got the full versions of the songs where my real fans, you know, should listen to them at. I just try and be smart with the algorithms. I try to give my fans what they want in terms of, you know, bands that I cover, and the musicality of it is kind of what I want to do. So I'm a huge fan of orchestral, cinematic piano music, right? A lot of strings, a lot of, you know, intense percussion. I try and incorporate that into my videos, but I try and, yeah, listen to the fans, like, what songs I should pimp up, what artists I should pimp up. So, I think that's a good balance for now.
Yeah. What would be, like, the dream, if you could feature on any metal song, past or present, like, as in you're in the original song, what would you?
I would love to. It would be a full circle moment if I could appear or be a part of some type of, like, Parkway Drive release. So when I started Mystique, right, I had a YouTube. This was, like, I reckon, like, 10 years ago. That's when I was just slowly doing it. Like, I started uni. I just had to do something on the side, right? Because I was just at the end of high school, I was just sick of being the same as everyone else. Like, we go to school, we have the same subjects, we have the same schedule, same teachers. We have to use the same, like, language, etiquette, uniform. And I just wanted to kind of steer out of that while I was at uni. So, you know, I would still go to uni, all that kind of stuff, do what I had to, but I just wanted to have that bit of freedom at home doing something else, which was Mystique, right? So I was, a Parkway Drive fan. I just did a couple of covers on YouTube, and straight away I would get requests from people saying, oh, do Carrie and do Boneyards, do this, whatever, right? So because of the comments, I would keep doing Parkway Drive, and I was actually known as the Parkway Drive piano girl for the longest time. So, and then I just branched out doing other bands, all that kind of stuff. Cause I was just like, oh, it's a bit embarrassing just being so obsessed with one band the whole time. I still love them though. Just slowly I developed, you know, into Instagram, Facebook, different types of content, all that kind of stuff. Now I do Mystique full time, which is awesome. After, like, a lot of years of teaching, I just, you know, transitioned into doing Mystique full time during the pandemic. And I just love thinking about potentially, you know, hitting up bands like Parkway Drive in the future. Just, I don't know, it can be like, so when I work with people, it's either like I'm on a new song of theirs as a feature, or I think it'll be a classic to revisit, say, an old Parkway Drive song, right? Or even with Architects, revisit an old Architects song that people just completely froth over. Get the vocalist of those bands into the studio with me. I would play, you know, live classical piano, write legitimate strings, conduct, acquire, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think that would bring me the ultimate happiness.
Yeah, that I not so long ago spoke to, do you know Simon Dobson, who he did the orchestral stuff with Architects and with Alter Bridge?
Yes, we follow each other, I think. Yes.
Yeah, he's wicked, and I was just wondering if you, I realize it might be a sort of small world moment if you knew each other. I've sort of, he's a fantastic composer, but as you mentioned Architects, I suppose that's almost like bursting your bubble a bit, going, oh, sorry, isn't it? But yeah, I know he's done some really wicked stuff with them. But what do you, because quite often I know, actually, that was a silly question. I've got a better question. So you're talking about finding your kind of, I guess, breaking from some of the, I guess, norms and just things that you see day to day, you know, that standard trajectory a lot of people kind of tend to follow. What do you think it was about you that made you want to have that outlet, you know, that kind of musical outlet?
Like compared to like what other people were doing around me and stuff like that?
Yeah,
is that
like,
what you mean?
I mean, for me, I kind of always felt like a bit, I was to an extent going down the sort of 9-to-5 sort of,
I was on that
route, I guess. I mean, it was kind of the way my school, to be fair, like credit to my school, they were very good at like gearing you up to doing a good job and going to uni and all of that. But like, I just kind of got into the system of it and I was just like, this isn't what I want to do.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my thing.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So what was it for you that kind of prompted you to go, okay, I want to pursue something different here?
So, at first it wasn't like my hunger to succeed in music, right? It was my fear of being a 9-to-5er. So I had such a, like, I was just passionate about not doing that. And at first I thought like, you know, I'm only 16, 17, like this has to be normal, right? Where you just, you know, you're still a kid, or like, you know, it's just laziness and I'll get, you know, used to it or whatever. But a lot of my friends were just really excited about it, you know, to get into the workforce, all that kind of stuff. So I just thought to myself, like, whatever, I'll just do music at uni because that's what I'm good at. I was crap at everything else. And let's just at least be good at one thing, right? I'm a huge fan of, huge nerd of music theory. So I feel like, you know, those who are good at English, math, science, right? I wasn't that good at it, but that is all made up in my skill for music theory. So I'm very proud of that. And, I just did what I could to push through, doing music after uni. And I still, I didn't know where I was heading, but I just knew that everything was going to be okay as long as I have an interest, I develop that interest. So in my case, you know, YouTube channel, Mystique, right? And then, things just started to slowly make sense. Like I learned during uni that you don't have to be going into a job straight away. I studied music composition, by the way, and I learned that a lot of my friends, they taught singing or guitar from home and stuff like that, right? So at the time I was actually learning piano. I think I was just finishing up like one of the highest grades, right? So I was learning since I was 6 years old at that school, at the piano school. And then, I asked my teacher about I said to him, hey, I don't want to do like a 9-to-5, like a long job after I finish uni. Is there a way that you could set me up to teach piano here? And then like literally the week after that, I got taken in. I started teaching soon after that. And, and then like I studied my master's in teaching, right? So I wanted to develop teaching, right? I wanted to teach still piano, but not the after school types of lessons that, you know, how kids they learn for half an hour each kid. I wanted to still do that, but during the day at like a really good private school. And long story short, when I finished my master's, I didn't get into that. I just got straight into substitute teaching because it was really easy to just get into an agency, and then you get phone calls at 7 a.m. in the morning and they tell you what school they want you to go to. So that was my life, actually. Like it was even more hectic than a 9-to-5, which is pretty funny, but it was like my decision. I didn't feel that I had to do any 9-to-5. It was just like go absolutely ham crazy with music and teaching, connecting with kids. And then, slowly I just I did Mystique after hours. I did Mystique during recess, during lunch, in the staff rooms when, you know, all the teachers were hanging out. And yeah, it was just my fear of 9 to 5 that I guess made me who I am today.
Yeah, I totally get that. I used to do like sort of pub work just part time through uni. And then I sort of did it as, so I teach full time at the moment, and I was
nice.
Kind of
good on ya.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's nice. I will be teaching someone in a few hours. So that'll be, yeah, I've got a kind of weirdly busier Monday than I normally would. But I remember doing the pub thing, and it was kind of enjoyable. But like the thing I really hated was just turning up, and you know, there's something really repetitive doesn't quite do it justice, where you turn up and it's just like the pub's all perfectly clean and you're like, oh, this is exactly what happened yesterday. But it's very Groundhog
yes.
Day. Like there's no, it doesn't feel like there's any, you know, obviously you can work your way up if you're passionate about kind of getting into that industry, you can yep. work your way through it. But like for me, where it's just like a part-time job just to get some money in, and I remember the hardest bit was when I was like getting into teaching. I was charging like 4 times what I would earn at the pub. And I'd do like a few hours teaching. And then I would go and do, I'd do like 2 hours of teaching. And I'd do like a whole day of part-time, sort of, you know, my part-time job at the pub, and get back and I will have earned like just a bit more maybe than I was doing with the teaching. It's like, it's a job I like less and I'm earning less. And I remember at that point, my motivation just completely like...
It's hard. Exactly. It's hard. It's like, do people prioritize their passion or do they prioritize money? I suppose it's at different parts of their life. You know, if they're like really saving up for something, for example, like I've got a lot of friends that are in bands, and sometimes you have to, you know, save up more money than you think for a tour if you're not in a label necessarily or whatever it may be. And they just take whatever jobs they can, even if they hate them, just to be able to, you know, buy that plane ticket for tour and to then make it more possible for them to do what they love doing and stuff. So, yeah, but I think anything you do in life, you just got to do it with a smile on your face and then in the meantime, just think about what is it that you really do want to do, and just use that negative kind of energy in a way at that job that you don't really like. Use that negative energy to inspire you to take the right smart steps towards the stuff that you do want to do, and, you know, just chip away at it.
Yeah. What's kind of, obviously, you know, it's, there's something sort of going into, doing music full time where obviously you, when it's your passion, when it's so closely tied to like what you in, you know, what you enjoy doing, that, you know, if money weren't a thing, you'd probably still be doing it anyway, kind of thing. Obviously yeah. Then when things start to become more challenging, you know, if like the business side gets in the way or if you're not feeling creative or whatever, I know personally think that can be quite a downer when you don't feel like you're maybe you don't feel motivated or you don't feel kind of inspired in the right way. How do you kind of push through this stuff where maybe you're not feeling so motivated? Because it's, I know it's difficult when it is like, you know, your passion.
Yes.
And you're sat there thinking, why am I not motivated, you know?
So I actually experienced this feeling a few days ago. And it was actually pretty full on, and I felt a bit ashamed of myself for feeling this way, but everything happens for a reason, so this is just a huge stepping stone to the next, I guess, era of Mystique. But yeah, there's just a lot going on with I've had to take January off, for example, for Mystique, so I could just breathe. Right. And a lot of clients that I had at the start of the year, at the end of last year, they were, you know, they were aware that I could start in February and stuff like that. Whereas I was always putting, you know, my clients first, me last. It just made me spiral a little bit, made me question what I'm doing. So yeah, I took the right step in taking January off. But then when I started working in Feb, I just wasn't used to, you know, the schedule after just, you know, taking a month off. And, I got very overwhelmed. So I just had to pause for a sec and just say, all right, what is literally the one important thing that I have to do right now? Oh, it's sending an email off back to this company for, you know, whatever ad I'm going to do for them next week or whatever it is, right? So you just have this list of important things. And if it's a video that I have to film, I hate filming, right? I have to do it though. Like, I hate it. If I'm just like, you know, sitting on the couch and I'm just like, oh crap, like I finished this episode of whatever, like whatever I'm watching, like Bling Empire or something. I'm just like, damn it. No, I can't watch another episode. I need to get up and film whatever I'm filming, you know, whatever I need to do for my audience, for an ad or whatever it may be, a feature client that would like me to promote our song. I just break it down into tiny, tiny steps. Like, I'm not talking about like, all right, get up, go do your makeup and then set up. Like, I'm literally talking about go into your makeup bag, unzip it, grab your brush or whatever it is, beauty blender, grab the foundation. Like, I'm like, this is tiny stuff. And I feel that breaking it down, it just breaks through my motivation. As in, like, sorry, my demotivation. It makes me motivated to just be like, why can't I do this? Like, come on, like, it's easy, right? So anything that I just, I don't know, anytime I feel that there's a wall in front of me, I just really ask myself, I'm like, honestly, why is this so hard? Like, I've done this a million times. Like, why is it so hard? Sometimes it's hard because, like, you might feel it's not worth it, but you just got to do it, you know, just got to do it.
I definitely know that. I've been trying to get into running the last like couple months. Very New Year's resolution-y. I started a few days before the New Year.
Same.
So, yeah. So I feel like I've just, it doesn't quite feel like a New Year's resolution, so it feels a bit less cheesy. But I've just been making sure to get out, like out the house every day, even if it's literally good. Like if I'm really busy, I'm like, I'll just run around the block and just come back. It literally, that literally will take me like 2-3 minutes, but it's like at least I've done it. I've got
yeah,
even if it's not a lazy thing, it's just like I don't have time, you know.
Yeah, the fact that you chose to do it, that's the important thing. And then the benefits are like, you know, fresh air, movement, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I think that I totally can sort of, I think it's so easy again with music, where the end goal can often feel like such a massive, especially with what, you know, you've got these massive like orchestral arrangements and then you're going ahead and filming stuff with it as well and whatever, like you know, that there's a lot of steps to that I think you could so easily get overwhelmed by, you know. How do you approach, I guess, this, and this is something that I think practically a lot of musicians maybe could take, when you approach these kind of big arrangements, you know, so like for example, I, you know, I play guitar and I kind of write stuff in a very guitaristy way, and I've dipped my toe into going as far as like string arrangements, and I can kind of build the chords and make them do the, you know, move with the things,
do the thing,
yeah, but like but they're pretty elementary, like I think I go as far as some like chord inversions, but I never really know like which one's better than the other one for this particular moment. I just kind of do what sounds good, which I guess is fine. But what's your maybe your advice for bands that want to start doing this kind of thing, bringing in something a bit more involved in the sort of arrangement side, because I imagine there are quite a lot that probably will just, you know, like me, will just plug the chords in and go, that'll do. How do you kind of level it up beyond that?
Oh my God. So
hire
this,
you, I guess.
This question always stumps me because I want to come up with an easy solution. Even in content, like I've actually been thinking about like, all right, what content can I do to help this type of person that you just described, right? But it depends on their skill set. It just depends on the style of music. I taught piano for 10 years, right? And everyone's approach, as you would know, being a teacher as well, like everyone's approach and the way they take in information, apply it, is all different, right? But let's just say someone was doing a metalcore cover of a pop song, right? We know that pop songs have, and still a lot of metal songs have, four chords, right? The four chords. So I would just honestly tell people to Google chords for whatever song it's called, right? If they're doing a cover of like a pop song. Pop songs are just really easy to learn music theory with. That's what I did with a lot of my students, and then they applied that to whatever genres they like to do. I would just get the person to just Google the chords, and you know, you'd have the lyrics come up with the chord letters on top. Then you would go to diagrams where it shows you how to play those chords on the keys. And just straight away, I would get those people to, you know, once they've got a lot of their instruments already recorded and they're up to the strings, up to the synth, the piano, whatever it may be, they just play the chords as they are written. And that just gets them used to having, you know, the full voicing of a chord rather than just one note of the chord, because it sounds a little bit dry sometimes if it's just using one note. And then my biggest, what I think makes strings and keys sound the best is when you've got, say you've got four chords, you would have to do inversions on some of them so that they're not as jumpy, right? You're familiar with inversions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how would we describe that? Just like you still use the same letter names in each chord, right? You still use the same letters, but you just move them up or down so that each chord has, like, the notes from each chord are just, you know, very, very close to one another. So less, like, less jumpy and stuff. So, anyway, I'll do a tutorial on that one day. People need to know chords and inversions.
Yeah. I always try and, I remember asking, I had a really talented guitar tutor called Tom Ford at my uni. And I remember asking him, I could tell I was like the annoying student when I asked him this, because like we were talking about chord inversions and I was like, but why, like, he was kind of saying how they were better, like not better, but you know what I mean, like kind of neater. And I was like,
yeah, neater. Yeah.
But like me at the time was like, why? What's wrong with a big jump? And he's like, there's nothing, like, I think me asking him, because I was, again, playing metal where you're like, you play your ones and then your 13s and then your eights on the fretboard.
Yeah,
and,
like, see, you know, I'm not familiar with that, but I kind of get what you mean though.
Jumping all over the place, basically.
It's got its own rules, yeah.
Yeah, and like, so I was like, what's wrong with big jumps? And he was, like, he wasn't, there's no way he was stumped by the question, but I don't think he had like a, there's technically nothing wrong, is there? It sounds a bit like chunky. It just sounds a bit like, I don't quite know how to put it. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm just trying to figure out how to explain it. Yeah, just neater.
Yeah.
Just, it's not right or wrong, but it just flows nice.
You can kind of, depending on the song, follow it more easily, I find. You can follow the melodies of each note a bit more.
Yeah. It's like more pleasant for the ear. If it's an accompanying instrument, it should be consisted of inversions, right? Because it's smoother, it's neater. If it's jumpy, it can take away the attention from, you know, the vocals or like the main guitar riff or whatever it may be, or the guitar solo.
Do you have many like influences in the more kind of classical kind of genres, or do you listen to like, Do you find in your sort of listening habits, you're listening to stuff that is quite detached from, you know, the metal sort of side of things? Is that something, I guess, through teaching naturally you've had to anyway, but...
Yeah, and like studying at uni and stuff, well, you're kind of like, you know, told to do it and stuff like that. But, you know, I've developed a strong love for Schubert's style. One of my favourite pieces that Liszt did a rendition of, so it's a Schubert orchestral piece that Liszt did on piano. It's called Stanchion, which means serenade. And I just see the piece and I think it's the most perfect song ever written in terms of like movement of the hands. Like you've got a, for example, you've got a like main melody opening up in right hand with left hand doing these really nice chords in 3-4, right? And then you got like a B section. And then when that A section comes back in, the melody that we heard in right hand is played an octave lower. And that's kind of like a male response to the feminine question that was introduced in the first thing. So it's kind of like a love story type of thing. I really appreciate how piano music in the classical eras and romantic eras, especially the romantic eras, how they really conveyed a message. You don't need lyrics or anything. It's just all in the feel of the music, right? So I think that's, yeah, I love a lot of Schubert's compositions. That certainly influenced the way that I write my music as well. So little rules that he followed, whether they're melodic, whether they're, you know, structural, rhythmic, I take little bits and pieces, you know, out from his music and apply it to Earthcaller, Mystique's random compositions, whatever. Sometimes I write EDM as well. But also when I'm, you know, writing just choirs for deathcore, I sometimes just, you know, take rhythms that Rachmaninoff or other composers that I studied would kind of do for their pieces. So I think it's pretty cool to just, yeah, bring that back.
Yeah, I feel like there's Schubert reminds me of I remember there's a really depressing book that I read in an English class.
Oh, yeah?
And I cannot remember. I mean, I'm kind of glad because I don't want to read it again. But it there was so, but Schubert was like it was about oh god, what was it? This is such a pointless anecdote because I can't even remember the book.
No, but, you have to message me when you remember.
Yeah, I think it was I remember what the cover looked like, but obviously there's probably loads of different covers for that book. But either way, yeah, I remember Schubert was like, it was part of the sort of the theme of the, and it was very depressing. So that's my one relation or sort of...
love it.
That, yeah. when you're kind of thinking about... yeah, because I know a lot of guitarists bring in classical sort of influences, but sometimes I feel like they can be a little bit cheesy sometimes, but the way I feel like guitarists quite often... I'm sure I've been guilty of it. The classical influences can be a little bit almost parodied, you know, where you're like, it's almost like they'll reference kind of the most typical classical thing you could think of when you think classical in your head. I think having that, you know, it's like I always feel like there are certain lyrical references, for example, sometimes that feel a bit cheap, you know, where like, I don't know, sometimes I always feel that... a common one is referencing like the Bible or something, you know, and it's like they'll just throw a line in because they're like, yeah, I read, and you're like, I don't know where
I'm
I was going
so
with
poetic.
That. I feel like guitarists have this habit of I don't know, maybe there's more to, I think a lot of metal guitarists proclaim this whole, oh yeah, classical's great, but like maybe don't listen to it. Probably a lot of metal guitarists are rather annoyed at me right now, but I don't know where I was going with that thought. I just had to get that out there. when you're kind of you're talking about doing some features for people, when you're thinking about how to sort of impose your ideas on that, how do you find that balance between like getting your character in there? Obviously, that's kind of why people, yeah, it's why people approach you. How do you get sort of balance that with like sort of, I guess, serving the song, because you could serve the song but then have none of you in there and that might just feel a bit kind of empty.
I know.
How do you get that
middle
ground?
Question. I like this question. So there's actually two types of clients. One that the not so common one, right, is the one where they already have an idea but they can't physically do it. They just give me a little brief of what they can envision. And then, you know, when I send them an update, they ask for a refinement, and they can even get quite specific with me, like, oh, can you make this note an E instead of a G or whatever it may be, right? So they already have a vision, but they still respect me in, you know, giving my professional opinion on what the song should kind of sound like. And, you know, every client's amazing that I work with, right? And then you've got the more common client, which just simply wants the Mystique spice added to this song. Just before, I was working on a more like rocky song that wanted the Mystique touch. Before that, I was working on a quite like deathcore-y kind of piece that also wanted the Mystique spice, right? So I'm not going to add the exact same types of layers. Like, I'm not going to write crazy like choir chants in Latin on this rock song, but I am on the deathcore song because that's just how it is. But at the same time, you know, I'll be using piano, I'll be using strings, I've just got it up here in front of me, staccato strings, all that kind of stuff stays. I've always got a template for my for my pieces for my clients, but for example, in the more rocky pieces, I might have less of a reverb on the piano. On the deathcore metalcore pieces, I might have like a really cool wide spread reverb depending where it is in the song. So I'm just that used to having this variety that I don't even ask myself twice about it. At the start, I would have to just, I didn't necessarily feel lost when I got sent, say, even like a pop song. I've done some pop song features, right? Or like some rap stuff. So one day I would be doing that. And then the next day, you know, you got a black metal song. So I would just have to practice deciding what instruments go where in which song and what techniques do they use to, really benefit the song. An easy thing that I do, for example, is if it's a song with just like a sustained guitar type of melody over, you know, blast beats or whatever, I just, a lot of bands send me the stems. So I just isolate the guitar and copy that with the choir, right? So that's a single line melody. And then I just thicken it up with harmonies and then boom, copy and paste that into like copy the leading note into like the leading voice into the violin, the harmony lower into the viola, and then the tonic goes obviously in the cello. So it's just like if I just copy one idea that a guitar does, I've already got all of these layers sorted.
Yeah, I like how you said the tonic obviously goes in the cello. I'm just like, cool.
Duh.
Yeah.
Do you not know that? No.
Yeah. I remember we did something like that in one of our music.
Yeah, but not always. Concert. Not always. It's just neat.
Obviously, but not always. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Top advice. I'll take that on board. Thank you. No. It's interesting to hear how you kind of spread the stuff across different instruments, because I know like I said, I just look at, I go on Logic and I just click on like studio strings or whatever, and it all goes on there. Like it just did all the whole,
yeah.
It's just on there. When you've got, obviously, I said, I just look at strings basically. I don't really even go beyond that. How do you decide, I guess it's genre appropriate. How do you decide like, okay, this time I'm going to work more with like this group of instruments and then this group of instruments? How do you, or because I mean you've got so many at your disposal, it must be tempting just to kind of throw everything in the pot. How do you decide what to sort of emphasize with each track?
Well, I always have strings on my template. I also have I can see in front of me here, I've got low brass, I've got horns. The two songs that I did today, the rock one and a deathcore song, I actually didn't use any horns for some reason. I just didn't vibe them, right? They didn't need that extra, like, that type of layer because the guitars were already quite distorted. You don't need that too much. Sometimes I do demonstrate that in my videos that I post, but that's just to show people like, yeah, you can add horns if you want, right? Like, doesn't mean like if I was to do that song, I would add horns. It's just how I feel. It's literally based on my mood. But then again, my clients might get back to me and say, hey, could you add some horns in there when that melody repeats? So of course, let's go for it. But yeah, other times when I do have a choice to do horns, I might do it when you've got like a long melody, like a you know, there's like really nice strong melodic goosebumpy outros where the chords are just so easy strummed, it's just like a nice drum beat and it just, you know, brings chills, right? So when the melody repeats for like the fourth time, right, out of say like eight times, then I bring in the horns. If everything stays the same and has to repeat, I then ask myself, all right, I don't want the exact same sound again. Let's add literally just one more instrument. Oh, horns. So, and it makes it more triumphant that way as well, depending on the genre. So it's just like if stuff repeats a little bit too much, then I say, all right, what haven't I used yet? You know, or I might add like a really cool, synth sound. Right? I've got like a million of them. So it's always interesting to see what I kind of choose. It's just, you know, I'm sure you're used to it. Like when you've got so many things in front of you, you just kind of eeny, meeny, miny, mo, choose the sound. So I just do that with it. And, you know, if it sticks, it sticks.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad I've just got the one instrument. Like, and just, there's so
good.
Many, I mean, like with the.
So I'm so stressed all the time. I've got too many.
Yeah. I have loads of friends who are obsessed with like guitar pedals and tones and things, and I'm just like, I just want to sound good, you know. I would like to refine what is me, like what is my sound. I kind of know what it is in my playing style in terms of like my actual guitar tone. It's like, was my I don't know, good hopefully is my sound. I don't know. I haven't really refined that, so having more than one option there would just be, I would just find it to be a nightmare. But how do you kind of develop your sound, like, you know, keep it fresh with what you're doing? How do you kind of I guess, because it's difficult, isn't it, because you want to, again, you want to deliver what people are expecting of to be your sound, right? But how do you then just include that little thing where you think, oh, that's new? Like, do you ever worry about being too out there with that kind of stuff?
Not really. I try to not jump into too many things at once too quick, because I just want to spread it out. You know, I just want to give people the era of choirs. You know, maybe my next era will be organ. Like, I love just improvising on a huge church organ sound, my monitors all the way up, all that kind of stuff. Like, just, you know, doing all the chord inversions and stuff, as we talked about earlier. But yeah, I try and just naturally go towards what I feel, like all the strings, all the choir, all that kind of stuff just came out naturally, because that's what I studied when I was at uni. That's the kind of genre that I was listening to since I was like super young, you know, studying Bach, Chopin, Beethoven, all that kind of stuff. They also, you know, introduced me to actual orchestral music, not just piano music. And I think just what I've always done since I've started Mystique was, in one hand, I've got the metal, in the other hand, I've got the classical. So the classical one day can look like, you know, choir chants, strings, tabula bells, organ. So it's just like the list just goes on, right? Like, what haven't I heard much of in metal that I appreciate as a music instrument? I just kind of just mix and match. But if I have a really good idea, I just kind of hold it off just to, you know, strategically, you know, every few months I revisit, like, all right, where's Mystique at now? Like, you know, how are the algorithms treating me? Like, Facebook's absolutely ridiculous at the moment, but Instagram's treating me really good for once. So, you know, things change as well, like algorithmically. So sometimes I can't, like, if I'm trying to get the algorithms back to being great, I sometimes don't know whether to do another pimped up video, which I know my audience like, or do I just jump into something completely different? Like, it's not easy, but just whatever decision I choose to do, I just, you know, try and do a good job. I try and, you know, I do it with a smile on my face. I get back to, you know, comments when I can, make people feel like they're being listened to. And it's a big world out there, you know, with music and content making and all that. But yeah, I want to do more orchestral kind of stuff where I don't know, I just really showcase my cinematic side, because I feel I can go way more epic.
Yeah, that's not a phrase you hear often. So I can showcase my cinematic side. Imagine saying that somewhere in public. Yeah, yeah. I have no idea what you're on about.
It's just hard doing that. Like I can, you know, sit down and write, you know, like even a 1 minute really cool piece of music, right? The cinematic kind of stuff. But what's stopping me is knowing that there's other types of content that people prefer me doing. And such as, you know, my pimped ups, like other stuff, piano covers, whatever it may be. And then next minute, it's like, all right, that amazing cinematic idea that I had in mind, that's like, that wants to come out of me, it's now in the back seat, because other ideas are, I feel, more important. But then again, I just have to, you know, just go for it sometimes. Like, it just, all it takes is just a few hours for me to make and, you know, then film and stuff. So, I'll see how I go. I might post something in the coming weeks with that. I'll see how I go. But hopefully people dig it.
Yeah, nice. I think, okay, I've got two quick fire questions.
Yep.
That I'm intrigued to hear. And then I'll get your question for the next guest. So, quickly, what's your, not quickly, but you know, what's, sorry, rush you out the door. What's best film score of all time, according to you?
I've always been a fan of Jurassic Park. The nice. Jurassic Park theme.
I almost know it better Harry from Potter. The memes. Like, I always, you know, all the Jurassic Park memes with the poorly played, where they play it on like a flute.
I know, that's what I hear. That's what I hear. It's sad, but funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I always.
What about yours? What's your favorite?
It's funny, I was talking to Simon Dobson about this, actually. I really like, you know, there's, it's such a cop-out answer saying you like Hans Zimmer, because everyone knows Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, right?
I really like the sort of mood that he creates, where you're maybe not following the melodies and things, you're just sort of in the moment with it, which I think is incredible.
Yes, absolutely.
But I really like the more, quirky film scores, because I think it's quite not easy. I don't know how to compose a film score. But like, if you make something big and emotion, like really impactful, this massive sound, like almost by default, you're going to be sort of taken away with it a bit, you know, like what Hans Zimmer kind of does.
Yeah.
And you hear it in a lot of film, yeah, we used superhero movies and stuff. But I quite like the sort of the more quirky ones where, you know, something like in Amelie, you know, that piano part I think is so great. I don't know the composer for that. I love the movie In Bruges, and I actually really like the music in that as well. It's quite quirky and it's a bit weird, but like it's, and I think there's a bit more to that than just the like mahoosive, you know, strings, everything, like big sort of daunting, scary sounds where, like, you know, by default you're just going to get a sort of an emotional, you know it's going to work kind of thing. Whereas I quite appreciate the sort of quirky little piano parts with, like, you know, I find that sometimes has a bit more to it. So that's my best answer. I always, whenever people ask me stuff like this or like classical music, I'm like, I don't know much.
Yeah, that's just where I'm from. That's just my nostalgic side.
yeah. But yeah, I really like the piano. I might try and learn that piano part on guitar. So that, I think that's really good. So I'm trying to think if we've got any others. Yeah, that's probably my best answer I can give for that. The other thing was, if you could give like one piece of advice, like a composer's advice to like your average meathead metal guitar, drums or bass player, you know, like, okay, here's something to think about. It doesn't have to be like a strictly for composing, but just for music on the whole. What do you think maybe sort of, you know, your average drummer, bassist, guitar player in a rock metal band is missing out that they could draw from sort of the more compositional side?
Ooh, chords and chord progressions.
Nice.
But then with drums, like you can't do that with drums. But then again, drummers, I believe drummers need to know music theory a little bit when it comes to like even pitch. You know what I mean? Just, they should all just... Wait, I changed my answer. They should all just understand still how to do chords, but on a piano, because I feel piano really lays out the notes nicely. It's, you know, very visual, like it's very friendly, whereas learning, you know, say notes and stuff like that, given that the guitarists or bassists just do tabs, right? Just know where the letters are on the piano, know their relations, know chords, their inversions, understand what one little difference you have to do to go from a major chord to a minor chord, right? Just, you know, flatten the three. Like when I taught a few of my younger students back in the day, the difference between a major and a minor chord, the sound is quite different, right? You think it's just the notes are completely shifted, but it's just literally one semitone of a difference for one note. So just, yeah, I think just teaching basic music theory on a piano is a necessity for every musician.
Yeah, I kind of somewhat envy pianists where you've got like the 12 notes and then the 12 notes next to it are the same, like, you know.
Yes,
whereas I guess you've got that on guitar on one string, but that's not really very useful. So yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare. I'd like to get more into piano at some point, but then I also want to learn drums, and I also want to, there's a, you know, the list goes,
oh my god,
on.
Yes.
So
I learned drums for like a few months when I was in year 8, when I was like 14, and then my parents just decided to, I don't know, they just stopped me from doing that, and they just said, oh, you can just continue piano. And I'm like, okay.
Suddenly the drum kit's in the skip.
Didn't argue with that.
Yeah. I feel like there's a certain level of like tolerance that parents, like a sort of admirable level of tolerance that drummers' parents have. Like, I don't even think my house would have been big enough to have learnt the drums. I would have pissed off my neighbours way too.
Yeah. I didn't even have any drums. I just picked it up. I was just sight reading. In the class, and I think I did a pretty good job, and but yeah, anyway, now I'm just playing piano. You know how it is, just a sad life of piano. Nah.
I do wonder if I could just, I was thinking one day what I'm tempted to do is maybe just set a camera up and just book a studio, like a rehearsal studio, for a whole day, and just see what I can do with the drums in a day. Like, because I know the mechanics of it. I know where, like, I know time signatures and, like, I know what, if I can hear, I know what the different drums sound like. So when I hear them in a song, although I can't air the drum them very well, I could figure it out, like, each little rhythmic measure at a time. So I was like, I wonder how far I could get in, like, 12 hours of just solid.
I know. And you know the coordination too, yeah? Like, how
to do
the hi-hat, the snare, the kick, like, the basic rock beat. Yeah,
I can do like
that,
rock beats 1 and 2. That's about as far as I can go on the drums. So, yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, maybe I don't know. I'll challenge you to that, a 12-hour drum off or something. See how far you can get in a day.
Oh, we'd love that. Well, we have to like achieve a particular like song or something, or like a section of a song.
I was thinking, like, I reckon there's some bits of Pantera songs I think might be doable. It has to be a song that I like, though. So I'm just like,
That's so important.
Yeah, so I don't want to just pick some rubbish, like, I don't know, I won't name a band, but, you know. Anyway, it's enough of my nonsense. So I need a question for the next guest to start their conversation.
Yes.
So it can be whatever you like.
So I would like to ask them, whoever they may be, either what is their favorite video game soundtrack, or if not video game, then... Yeah, I would just say with the movie soundtrack.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I feel like there's a big tie between video games and music, like musicians. I feel like there's a lot of gamers in the music world. So
I love it. I'm a huge fan of the Zelda music. Like when you asked me the question about the the movie, I'm just like, damn it, I'm a games person.
All right, quick. So what's the top film, video game score, top video game score then? Is it Zelda? I don't know Zelda that well, so.
It's like a big thing. There's a lot of Zeldas out there. I think that the most impressive video game score at the moment that I've heard is Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's the latest Zelda game, and there's a new one coming out sometime this year. It's just... you don't need a full hectic song when you're running through the fields and on a mission. You literally just need a few piano notes in like free form, just twinkling here and there. And that just, you know, really complements the horizon that, you know, you're looking into and all that kind of stuff. So I love how, I like the psychological effect of some video game scores, based on where you are in the game and how it should make you feel.
Not into like the Minecraft theme or like the I always used to play RuneScape as a kid, and they had all the little songs that were like,
that's it.
Some better than others. That brings me back. So also I need an artist that you want to sort of recommend to the world.
Well, aside from my band Earthcaller, just to not be biased, definitely Earthcaller. I actually worked with an artist called Esprit d'Air recently. We released a single together. Kai is behind it. And This is a song that, so the artist is from, I believe, Japan, living in the UK. Kai actually went to one of the Earth Caller shows last year. So I actually met, one of my clients, which is, I like how real it is, because sometimes clients is just like, digital on the internet, whatever, emails, it's nice to actually meet someone that I've worked with. So yeah, we just released a single, I would say like last week, actually. It's called Shizuku. So, it is, you have to listen to it, really catchy. Kai did the whole, like, he does vocals, I think guitars as well. I did like a synth solo, orchestrals, a piano solo, just random stuff as always, but it's a really fun, energetic song. They also released a, there was a illustrator that worked with us, and they did this, like, Kai is this anime samurai, and I'm just this like spirit that appears later on, and the illustrator, made me look a bit anime and things like that. So it was cool, like not only the music side of it, but and the amazing, communication, friendship that's been developed, one of my favorite people, but also just the visuals. So just all up, the project was really fun to do, and yeah, so Esprit d'Air, D with like a little apostrophe after it. Esprit d'Air and Shizuku, that's the song name.
Nice one. Yeah. I will give that a listen. I'm excited to hear. Nice. So,
Yeah.
anything you wanna plug to finish up?
I just want to say thank you for, giving me your time
It's all
and
right.
giving me these really good questions. I think these are my favorite questions that I've received yet.
Awesome. No, that's oh well that's that it's my pleasure. I'm slowly, hopefully slowly getting better at it. I think this is 90, what, 90, 91? So you're nearly at the 100 mark
Oh,
of
wow.
podcasts. So,
Damn, close.
I don't know what 100's gonna be. I don't know. I'm gonna have to find, like, I don't know,
It has to be
Tony
someone
Iommi or
like
someone.
wild.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I've met
that's
Tony Iommi once, and I messed up a guitar solo in front of him. So I need to redeem myself.
Yeah.
That's my one thing. So
Oh,
I
he
just need
might
to.
have forgotten. Who knows? Just
I don't.
change your
Yeah,
appearance and he won't know.
I think if he remembers that, I'll be really like. I'd like to think he's seen enough shit guitar solos in his life that that hopefully
Yeah.
didn't. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you
Love
very
it.
much. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Thank you so much. Likewise.